Hello, and welcome to the Hempville CBD Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Cooey. I'm an entrepreneur in the cannabis industry with my business, Hempville CBD. This podcast is dedicated to educating you on CBD and how it can positively impact your life. Also, we'll feature professionals in the cannabis market and share their expertise in the marketplace. Join us on this enlightening journey that will enrich your appreciation of the dynamic cannabis marketplace. Follow us at hempvillecbd.com, and as always, there's an open invitation to come visit us at the store in South Haven, Mississippi. Now, let's get to it. Hello, and welcome to the Hempville CBD Podcast. My name is Ben Cooey, owner and operator of the store Hempville CBD in South Haven, Mississippi, and also the website hempvillecbd.com. And sitting across from me is my producer, the man that makes everything work, Derek Michaud. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Ben. I'm very well. Thanks. Thanks for being here again. Good to see you. Anyone that watches this podcast, you'll see it changed a little bit. You and I have switched sides.
We have.
And that's because I made a beautiful $15 sign, you know, grassroots here. But anyone watching, you'll see our new Hempville CBD podcast sign. So the way my studio is set up, in order for the sign to be on your camera, we had to switch spots. So,
oh, hey, it's perfect because it shows the logo. And so, yes, when people are looking for us, they at least know what logo to look at when it pops on the screen.
We're both on the same page as far as branding. Hence, I'm wearing my brand on my shirt. So, yes, good to be here. We got a fun topic today. It is cannabis is a multi-billion dollar industry. So who's making all of that cheese, man? We got to figure out where that money's going.
That's right. Everybody thinks, well, if you're in this business, you're making a ton of money, and that's so far from the truth, but we'll get into it. But first, to kind of set it up, a lot of people get, when we talk about cannabis, all they think about is marijuana. And cannabis is actually two plants. It's the marijuana plant and the hemp plant. And the difference between them is the marijuana plant has a high THC level, low CBD. The hemp plant has a high CBD level, low THC level. Mm-hmm. Now, what happens with the hemp plant is the high CBD level in it will eventually turn over time. If you let it grow long enough, it'll turn into THC. But that is the difference between the two plants in our business. Now, when we talk about the cannabis industry, there are really three segments in that industry. You have the marijuana industry, the legal marijuana industry. That's recreational marijuana, mm-hmm, and medical marijuana. Mm-hmm. You have the hemp industry. I like to call it the secondary market. And then you have the illegal industry.
Street weed.
That's what you're doing. Now, each of these markets have their own hurdles. They're all a little different, but to kind of put it in a nutshell, the recreational and the medical marijuana, their biggest hurdle is regulation, mm-hmm, but it's too much regulation. I mean, we've talked in previous, and I'll say this all through this podcast too, we've talked in previous podcasts, studies have shown the having to maintain the ID card, the fact that the government is tracking you, you're giving up some of your rights, like the right to go buy a gun. You might not be able to get your prescriptions because the pharmacy is tracking you as well. It's not a private sale. That studies have shown that actually prevents people from going to the dispensary and actually forces a lot of people, because they want the privacy, to go to the street. Mm-hmm. And the street is dangerous.
Yeah, we've talked in depth about you don't know what you're getting. And there's some deadly stuff that people, correct, put on that stuff.
In the street. Now, in my business, the hemp industry, our problem is the exact opposite of the marijuana industry. It's lack of regulation. It's the wild, wild west in my industry. And that's a problem because when you have no regulation, you get a lot of bad players in the market. You get a lot of watered down product. You get product that what is advertised is not what it actually is. Mm-hmm. But the sale and everything else is private. You know, you can use cash. You're not being tracked. You're not having to give up any rights. So that's a benefit for me, but the lack of regulation is a big hurdle. And then, like we just said, the illegal industry, it's in the name. It's illegal. And that's where you end up with a lot of tainted product, a lot of bad product, and that's where people get hurt. Now, the cannabis industry is strong, but it was strong way before they ever made it legal. People have been using cannabis for thousands of years, but it became illegal in the early 1900s. And when they first legalized cannabis in 2012, it really did not change the number of users. It pretty much stayed the same. Legalization did not really increase the usage of it. Those people that use it were still using it. Those people that didn't. But what I feel is a lot of people are on the sidelines, that they're not against cannabis, but they don't use it. They're still using alcohol and prescription drugs. And the question is why. And what I see is, well, one of the reasons they're still using alcohol is it's what they know. It's what their parents used. It's what they used when they were younger, like in high school and college. There's easier access to it. And to me, and I used to be a guy that owned a liquor store before I became a teacher. and I mean, I love a good smooth glass of whiskey every now and then, or good bottle of wine. But alcohol does not taste good. So they're drinking it because it makes them happy. Yeah. It gets them loose.
I enjoyed the taste.
Yeah. Oh, did you?
Yes. That's why I had to quit.
Oh, usually to me, it's bitter or sour, or, you know, it's real strong.
Sure.
So that's why they're still using it.
Mm-hmm.
With prescription drugs, there's a place for that in our society. But like everything else, there's so much of it and there's so many side effects of it. You know, my father was a doctor for 40 years, and he told me, look, if you can handle it naturally, you're better off handling it naturally, because once you get on a prescription, you almost never get off. And in fact, all they do is add more to it. So that is an issue as well. One of the reasons they're still using alcohol and prescription drugs and not cannabis or hemp is simply because they've been told all their lives that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we grew up in the 80s with Nancy Reagan saying, say no to drugs. We were told over and over again, marijuana is addictive. It's a gateway drug. It's going to kill you. It has no medical value. None of that is true. None of that is true, but that's what we heard all of our lives. And also regulation, like we talked about earlier. Regulation is kind of like being a parent to a business. We know if you've had kids, if you're too hard on your kid, then you're just going to wear them down, break them down, and you're going to end up with problems. But at the same time, if you just let your kid run wild like the hemp industry, what happens? You lose control and you end up with problems. Regulation is a fine line, and our government really hadn't found a good middle place for that.
People will take advantage of the situation.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
However, the cannabis business is growing by leaps and bounds. So the question is, if it's growing by leaps and bounds, who's making all the money? So that's what we're going to get into today. Who's making the money in this business? Everyone, right? Everybody in the business is just becoming millionaires. Not really. That's really not happening. We do know the cannabis industry is working. More products are available now than before. I mean, if you think about it, now we have vape, we have topicals, we got all types of edibles, we got drinks, and we got smokables. But if you go back 20, 30 years ago or even further, all there was smokable. That's it. There was none of these other products. And there are a lot of people that don't smoke. I smoke every now and then, but I'm really a gummy or an edible person. Mm-hmm. I like to have the Delta 9 drinks simply because my wife makes me run these 5K races in the spring. that kills me.
Yeah.
But if I was smoking every day, I would look really bad in those. I'm already walking as it is, but I can't have her beat me. That's a thing. Also, there now more people are using, and I know in the beginning in 2012 when it was first legalized, it really didn't increase the usage. And if you were like me, I thought, man, they're going to legalize marijuana. They're going to put all the drug dealers out of business. This will be great. And that really wasn't the case. But the reason we're having more people use now is because in a couple, you know, I think it was our last podcast, I talked about how in the last 10 years, there have been over 32,000 studies dealing with cannabis. And the results of pretty much all of those studies come down to, hey, this is good. It's helpful. It does have medical value. It's non-addictive, or it's a very, very low abuse rate. That is why the FDA and Department of Health and Human Services have recommended to the DEA that they should move it from a Schedule 1 drug to a Schedule 3 because it does have medical value. That educational curve is starting to take root. And so that's why we're having more users now. But it's the education that is the gap. And that's what we're trying to fill in with this podcast. The point of the podcast is, who's making all the money? Well, the business is, you know, the cannabis business is doing great. It's growing by leaps and bounds. Why are we seeing so many companies downsize their company, restructure their company? And for the most part, a lot of your mom and pops are going out of business. So if the industry is doing so well, how come we're seeing this in the businesses? We know the industry is doing well because tax money's coming in. But when you ask the question, that really the real question you need to be asking is the cannabis industry doing better than what was predicted before it started? And that is something we never hear about. We always hear cannabis in this state open. First week they were open, they did a million in sales. It's unbelievable. It sounds great.
Yeah.
That's right. But is that what was predicted for it? I mean, the regulators that regulate that industry never really come out with that information. I don't know why. Also, you know, we know tax money's coming in, but it depends on who you are. For instance, a marijuana dispensary isn't paying federal taxes. They're just paying state taxes. A business like mine, the hemp industry, I'm paying both federal and state taxes. So the tax money's coming in. So if the industry's doing so well, why are we having all these problems? And I've kind of narrowed it down there. It's like anything else. Whenever you have a problem, it's usually multiple things that are causing that problem. I tried to pick the top three in this. And one of them was when it first came out that marijuana might be, when it was going to be legal, whether it's recreational or medical, everybody thought it was a gold rush. Yeah. And if you've studied American history, when we started developing the West, we all know about the gold rush out in California. They really don't talk about who made the money. Do you know who made the money in the gold rush?
No.
It was not the miners. 99% of the miners went out of business and they almost starved to death. The people that made the money in the gold rush back then were the local store owner that was selling all the equipment that you needed to go mining. They were the ones raking in the money. And the cannabis industry is the same way. I guess here's a perfect story to set this up. When in Mississippi, when we got approved, when the vote passed for medical marijuana, I had many people call me to ask me about not me opening up a store, but they wanted to run the idea of them opening up a dispensary. And I had a lady from a small, poor Mississippi town. She said, look, I'm calling you because I hear you're, you know, I've heard things about your business and how honest you are and how good y'all do. My brother said that I got $20,000 in my 401k. He said I could take that money, invest in his dispensary business, and that I would, if I gave him a year, I would never have to worry about money again. I'd be a multimillionaire, and I would be good.
That is a bill of goods.
And I said, well, look, let me ask you some questions. And I said, one, how much money do you think, does your brother think he's going to invest? Mm-hmm. She goes, well, he's got like $50,000 or $60,000 to invest. And I said, well, ma'am, I hate to tell you, but the license is $40,000. And the application fee for the license is $15,000. Mm. So right there, you don't have any money. But I told her the average dispensary at a minimum is going to cost you $1 million. Most of them are costing around about $1.5 to $2 million, if not more. That's a marijuana dispensary.
To just launch?
Just launch.
That's just to get on?
Just to get on board because of all the regulation that's involved in it. I mean, and here's a good example. If I have a product, let's say it's defective, I can just take that product and throw it in the garbage. In the marijuana industry, you can't do that. If you have an empty container that used to have marijuana in it, but now it's empty, you cannot throw that in the garbage. You have to handle it like hazardous waste.
Interesting.
You have to have a special garbage man who's licensed in hazardous waste come pick your garbage up. You have to have documentation of when this container became empty, how you disposed of it, where you put it, what time the garbage man came and picked it up. He has to sign off for it. You got to keep all that
documentation. This is for medicinal?
Yes.
So who's actually doing this?
I don't know.
Do you think anyone out there right now on medical is doing that? I wouldn't have known that you couldn't just throw your containers away.
Because that's one of the reasons I'm not in the medical marijuana industry is because when I owned my liquor store in Mississippi, the government made all of my deliveries and I did the ordering. But half the time I wouldn't get my order on time or I wouldn't even get it that week. It would come the following week. And so it was just so inconsistent. And I learned real quick, you do not want the government that deeply into your business because it's kind of like, look at FedEx and the post office. The post office loses like $10 million a day nationwide.
Golly.
It's huge. Explain to me why the post office, who has almost unlimited funding through our taxpayer dollars, is losing money. But people like FedEx, UPS, and all the other shippers are making millions, if not billions of dollars each year. It's because of government waste, government regulation. They are so slow to get something done or make a decision. Well, I saw that with my liquor store too, because I was so dependent on the government to deliver my alcohol because they control all the alcohol distribution in the state. And I've seen it put some liquor stores out of business. So when I got into the hemp cannabis industry, I picked the road that the government, I want the regulation. I don't want them completely out because we do need guardrails. But I looked at the marijuana industry and I said, are you crazy? Mm-hmm. This is just going to be a train wreck, at least for the first couple of years. But yeah, with the garbage, that's how you have to handle the garbage. But it's like that with every segment of your business. Mm-hmm. Anyway, as I'm talking to this lady, I'm telling her, you need $1 million to do this. You need $40,000 for the license. I asked her, I said, your brother who wants to partner up with you and run this business, what's he do for a living? Oh, well, he's a air conditioner heating person. He works for a guy that repairs that stuff. So he's not even the owner of that business. I'm like, does your brother have any business ownership experience? No. Has he worked in the cannabis industry ever? No.
These are pretty large red flags.
All these people thought, and she wasn't the only call. I got a lot of calls like this. And I told her, ma'am, you will be out of business before you even open. Mm-hmm. I said, not that I'm telling you what to do, but you're probably going to be better off keeping your $20,000 in that 401k or doing something else with it or at least investing it with somebody who does have experience, who knows what they're doing, who has a track record.
A business plan.
Yeah, a business plan.
The little things, but that goes back to the gold rush though, right? It's like they see the gold and they rush to it.
Oh yeah,
they just jump for it without really thinking about how hard it will be and where that money is really going to come from.
Right, and you're totally dependent on the government because they can change the rules or do something at any time. Also, we saw that in the hemp industry, the same thing with the marijuana. Everybody's jumping into the pool at the same time. Mm-hmm. And what's going to happen is you give it 2 or 3 years and 90-something percent of those people are going to be out of business. And the people that are, one, doing it right, got a business plan, have a track record prior to getting in, they are the ones that are possibly going to survive. Your mom and pops are going to get eaten up either by regulation or big corporations.
Or poor management, poor business operation.
We see that too.
The cream rises to the top.
It does.
Right.
Because in my business, we see a lot of bad players. We see a lot of bad product. We see a lot of bad customer service. And that only lasts for so long. And eventually, over time, it eventually will wear down and they'll go out.
So now we're in the hemp rush.
The hemp rush. Yes.
Well, the hemp rush.
The hemp rush is still kind of going on, but I see the marijuana rush happening. Yeah. And really, the people in the marijuana industry, at least in the state of Mississippi, that are really making good money are the people that went to the support systems of a dispensary. Like I know a guy who he was very familiar with all the testing. He handled all the testing for a hospital, all the medical testing that they do in a hospital. And so instead of, he wanted to open up a dispensary, but instead of opening up a dispensary, what he got into is all of these products have to be tested before they get on the shelf. So he went into the testing business of the medical marijuana. And there are only like two of them in the whole state. But we got like 113 licenses in the state. So he's raking it in because everybody has to use him or the other guy. There's not a lot of competition. That's where your money is. Kind of like the gold rush with the guy making the money was the store owner selling all the equipment. Now, the other problem in this industry is regulation and big corporations. The rules are all over the board. In the marijuana industry, the rules are kind of concrete. But in my industry, the rules, they're such a gray area. For instance, an attorney one time called me and said, and he was a good friend, so I didn't mind talking to him. He goes, is Delta 8 THC legal? And I said, well, is that a trick question? And he showed me the statute where he said, oh, this is illegal. Why are you selling it? And I said, that's the thing. You're showing me a statute where it's, you're saying it's illegal in a very vague way. Law enforcement's on TV, on the news saying we can never prosecute anybody for this crime because we have to have it in its natural weight. By the time it's put in a gummy, it's not in its natural weight. So we can't get the weight of it. Therefore, we might be able to arrest you for it, but we're never going to be able to prosecute. And so I told the attorney, I said, so you can never prosecute anybody for it? That kind of sounds like legal to me in a very odd way. And that's the problem with my business. There's no regulation, so you never know where you're going. You never know if you're doing the right thing or if you're doing the wrong thing. And that's why I got friends that work for the Mississippi Bureau of Narcotics or who have retired from that industry. And I usually go to them before I go to anybody else because they're going to know. They're, and, you know, from what they've told me, they're like, look, we got so many other things that we got to take care of.
Yes.
Bigger crimes, bigger drugs.
They don't need to waste their time on Delta 8 gummy bears.
Right. Unless you're selling something that's hurting the public, like we're getting complaints on it, or you're selling it to kids, we're going to come get you.
Health crisis.
And that has happened. I've seen that happen. But he goes, if you're trying to do the right thing and everything's good, you're okay. But government can regulate a business out of business because of the rules going back and forth or nobody knowing the rules and just... or being too much involved and them dragging, the government dragging their feet. Now, big corporations. When the hemp industry in Mississippi, along with everybody else, depending on when it became legal, bunch of mom and pops. There are a couple of franchises out there that do it, but even a lot of those franchises I would have questions about because I've studied them. But anyway, bunch of mom and pops. What I see happening, and I see this in the marijuana industry too, these mom and pops, they're not looking to grow. They want this one store. They want, you know, the two stores in their area to manage, and that's it. Well, as big industry, as this industry is growing, because we're getting more users. Big industries coming in and wiping out the mom and pops. And it's kind of like this. I grew up in a small town in Mississippi, college town though. In the 80s, we had maybe 10,000 people, but we had 6 grocery stores. Mm. Every grocery store was a mom and pop. Every owner of the grocery store lived in the town. Their kids went to school. We all knew them. Walmart came to town.
Dun, dun, dun.
You know, when I was a kid, the town wouldn't let any franchises, major franchises, come into the town. And the reason why is they were protecting the mom and pops. And as a kid, mm-hmm. I was naive. And I was like, man, I wish we had a Walmart. I wish we had a McDonald's. I wish we had all these things that I see in the city. And my mom's like, no, you think you want it, but you don't. Mm-hmm. And now I understand what she says. Walmart mm-hmm. comes to town. All of a sudden, all the local pharmacies start drying mm-hmm. up. All the little local businesses start drying up. The grocery stores. Now, we had, like I said, when I was a kid, we had 10,000 people in the town. We had 6 little grocery store markets. We now have 30,000 in the town, and we only have 3 grocery stores.
And a Walmart.
No. Walmart's one of the 3.
Oh, gotcha.
We got a super Walmart. We have a super Kroger. And then we have a discount grocery store mm-hmm. that is one of the original local owners from when I was a kid. In fact, the guy who owns it grew up with me and we went to school together. And it's, of course, he inherited this business from his parents. He's hanging on, but he's hanging on only because he's now having to advertise himself as the discount grocery store. It looks a little run down, but that's what a lot of people like about it is because
it's old school.
It's old school.
Yeah. It's like going to a Piggly Wiggly.
Exactly. Yeah. And when you walk in, it kind of feels like the 70s, mm-hmm. 80s vibe. And you got a lot of blue collar workers in there.
Sure.
He's barely holding on, but I think the only reason he's still there is because land in the town that I live in now is so much. Other major chains have tried to come in, but they've told what I've heard through the grapevine is the land costs so much that it's cost prohibitive for them to come in because a grocery store needs a huge amount of land for mm-hmm. not only the building, but the parking lot. So in regards to the cannabis market, the only ones that are poised to do well are the big corporations because eventually they're going to come in like the super Walmart and put your independent dispensaries out of business. Mm-hmm. We also see that in the hemp industry as well. That's one of the reasons what I try to do is we try to all bring in the best product at the best price and offer great customer service and the knowledge that my employees give the customer because customers are going to have questions. And you can't just go in there and be like, oh, man, it's good for sleep and relaxation and stuff like that. You got to be very educated to pass that education on to them. Mm-hmm. That is what I see as the livelihood of us surviving versus being swallowed up. That's going to allow me to compete because it's more personal. And I've seen that because when I was vacationing in Georgia a couple of years back, I went into a CBD shop and I asked the young lady behind the counter, I said, what is this good for? What's CBD do? Oh, it's good for sleep. It's good to relax. I'm like, is it going to get me high? No, it's not going to get you high, but it's good for you. I'm like, okay. I was like, do you have certificates of analysis on this stuff? What's that? Mm-hmm. A COA, it proves that the product has been tested. And no, we don't have anything like that. I don't know what you're talking about. She was so uneducated about the product. One, I don't see how they were selling anything. And two, I was sitting there thinking, we can put them out of business. I mean, mm-hmm. they are clueless in what they're doing. And as long as we're organized and together, we're going to be able to move forward. They're not. Now, why are the big corporations why are they in a position to where they are going to be successful? One, they can pay all the fees that come with opening up a business. And the fees are going to be high. They have the experience. I mean, some of these people that are coming in, they've been growing marijuana. They've been growing cannabis and hemp. And they've been in this business, some of them 20, 25 years. So there's a ton of experience, even the cultivators as well. We have people come in our shop. We get our flower. from farms out in California and Oregon. And I can't tell you the number of people that come in our store that say, this is the best bud I've ever had. It's better than anything I've ever bought in a dispensary anywhere in Missouri, Arkansas, Colorado, Mississippi. And part of the reason for that is the farmers I'm buying from have been growing. They're like second, third generation growers. They've been growing mm-hmm. this their whole lives. It's like an art form to them, and they do an amazing job. But let's say I'll take Mississippi, for example. The dispensaries have been open for 1 year, coming up 1 year this month. They have to buy from Mississippi farmers. Mississippi farmers have been growing cannabis for about 1 year. Right.
Yeah. Maybe add 6 months on the front end to kind of get things going. But that's nothing.
I'm sure they have brought some people in from the outside to help educate them and teach them how to grow it. Mm-hmm. But you're not. I got a 1 year of experience farmer in cannabis versus somebody who's been doing it for three generations. And the guy who's alive today doing it has been doing it for over 20 years. No competition. Mm-hmm. But I had that freedom in the hemp industry where regulations in the medical marijuana industry will not let you buy out of state. You have to buy from your state. Also, big corporations, they have the money to kind of to influence government and therefore influence legalization. And I'll give you an example. Here in Mississippi, they had the Mississippi for Compassionate Care. They were to help advise. From what I understand, I was not on the board, but one of my partners at the time was. Their job was to advise the lawmakers, kind of work with the lawmakers on setting the rules in place. However, to be on the Mississippi for Compassionate Care, you had to donate $20,000 to their fund because that money is going to help advertise and push the vote or get the vote out to try to legalize it. That helps influence, because you're on that panel, it helps influence what you're doing. And I know for a fact, and I can't get into detail about it, but there are people who are who've invested in these dispensaries that have in the past criminal records for drugs. Mm-hmm. There are people invested in it that are not on the investment list with the Secretary of State. That is very shady and not good. But, you know, I guess when you're on the board, you can kind of curve the rules a little bit mm-hmm. to get around those things. Also, the government changes. The government makes the rules, and those rules are kind of changing all the time. Big corporations have the ability and the flexibility to kind of move and adjust to those changes, where if you're a mom and pop, you're not going to be able to do that. I mean, if you're a mom and pop, that $40,000 licensing fee is already tough to do if you're a one-store, two-store owner. Now, if all of a sudden they decide, wow, we got too many licenses, the market's getting saturated, we need to pull that back. Well, how do you pull it back? We'll make the license cost more.
Yeah.
We're going to make that license now be $80,000.
You're going to weed everybody out.
Yeah, a big corporation can take that blow where a smaller mom and pop cannot. And all of this being said, the bottom line is the legal landscape of cannabis and hemp is still very unstable. I can tell you with my business, it seems like we can never get our feet on solid ground. We get rolling and we get moving in the right direction and something changes and man, we're having to adjust to it and we're having to kind of retrack and rebuild and do all that stuff. So that's a problem. So this comes down to, after explaining all that, what is the market making all the money? And the bottom line is, it's still the illegal market, the black market, the market on the street. And you ask, why is this? Because like I said in the beginning, you know, I thought, and along with millions of other people, oh, if they're going to legalize marijuana, they are going to put the drug dealer out of business. In fact, they've helped the drug dealer and they've helped that black market or the street market actually grow. And here's the reason why. I'll take two of the biggest population centers in our nation, both of them very liberal on their laws. New York City, the state of California. I'll start with the state of California first. There's about 40 million people in the state of California. How many licenses do you think there are?
For medical marijuana? No,
just for marijuana in general.
Gosh, I don't know.
There's only 1,000 licenses in the whole state. That's one dispensary for every 40,000 people. Think of it like a grocery store. If you had one grocery store for 40,000 people, that would be a hot mess.
Putting it that way just made it very clear. Yes.
Yeah, that's terrible.
You can't do that.
You can't do that. But that is government regulation dragging their feet. And if, as far as, you know, one store is not going to be able to handle 40,000 people. So where are the other, where are those customers going to go? They're going to go to the street. Mm-hmm. And when they go to the street, the street, like I said, has a lot of bad things in it. Now take New York City. New York City has about 8.5 million people in the city. How many licenses do you think they have?
I see 60.
Exactly. Wow. They have 60 licenses for that city. That now with California, with only having 1,000 licenses and 40 million people, it's a ratio of one dispensary for every 40,000. In New York, with 8.5 million people and only 60 licenses, that's one dispensary for every 141,000 people.
That's a long line to wait in.
That is a ratio that you cannot serve. And not that all 141,000 people are buying weed, but let's say 30%, 25%. Still, it's still
too many.
You can't service that.
Yeah.
So what happens? The illegal market sees that and they're like, hey, this is ripe for the picking. I don't understand this, but they, in my research, from what I found out is there's about 1,400 illegal dispensaries in New York City.
Wow.
And the first question is, well, if I'm a business owner, a legal dispensary, why aren't you putting them out of business? How come you're not going to go arrest them? Well, I mean, look at New York City. They're beating up the cops on the street. They don't have enough police to process the crime. And even when the police are out on the street, they're getting beat up. And what happened to the guys that beat up the cops? They were out of the street the next day. So the police aren't getting any support either. So they really are handcuffed as far as trying to crack down on all the illegal stuff. But you got 1,400 versus 60. That's a ratio of 23-1. Mm. As a legal dispensary, you cannot compete with that. That's just too much to compete with because you're surrounded by all the legal stuff. Now, this is what happens when you're an illegal dispensary. You don't have to go by the government regulations. You're not paying any type of tax. And as your prices, because you don't have the regulation that you have to pay for, because you don't have the taxes that you're paying, guess what? You can definitely have lower prices than your legal counterpart. Also, as new regulation comes into play, as the legal dispensary is trying to work around that legislation, and that might be a little hard, well, if you're illegal, you are so flexible, you can move on a dime. I mean, it's not a big deal.
Because you're invisible, trying to be.
Correct.
Until you're not, and then you pay the consequences.
Also, with illegal dispensaries, that's where you run into illegal dispensaries and street weed. That is where you run into the problems of having opioids or fentanyl on the weed. And people, I am telling you, it is happening everywhere. I've had a ton of people come in my shop the last 4 years that did not shop with me because they bought weed off the street. All of them have ended up in the hospital. Some of them have died. We even had an employee whose husband died from fentanyl. He didn't know it was on the thing he was taking, who died the day after Christmas and left her a single mom with two little boys the day after Christmas. So It is everywhere. And there's not hardly anybody I know that hadn't heard of somebody or knows somebody that has died or had a medical emergency dealing with something like that. So once again, like I said, where's the money going? It's going to the black, the illegal market or the black market, however you want to phrase that. And that market is super dangerous. And we have to change this. If law enforcement can't change it, how are we going to change it? And there's some things we can do. One, quit shopping there. And of course, being a customer, you might say, well, how do I know? One, look for a sales tax. If you're a legal business in any state, you have to have your sales tax license posted on the wall to where customers can see it. If you walk into a business and you don't see that on the wall somewhere, ask for it. And if they tell you, oh, it's in the back, it's in, no, legally, you have to have it on the wall to where people can see it. Because if it's not there, they're going to come shut you down.
Yeah.
They should. That's one thing you can do. The other is get to know who you're buying from. I mean, the customers that walk in our shop, they know us personally now. We know them because we take the time to engage with them as we're passing along the education. They like our product. They tell us about their experiences. That's part of the reason for the podcast as well, is so people can put a face with the name of Hempville and see the type of person and the type of character we have. Get to know who you're dealing with to make sure, hey, am I dealing with somebody I feel comfortable with? Am I dealing with somebody I got a good feeling about? Because usually your intuition is right. If you walk into a place and you feel like this guy is just selling you something just to sell you, or there's something off, you're probably correct about that. And don't fall for gimmicks. I mean, if you see a price that's super low, that is just not even close to your competition, there's something wrong with that price. It could be an illegal dispensary that has a flexibility to do that because they're not under the regulation and tax that a legal one has done, or it could be watered down product. But I can tell you, usually with the illegal dispensaries and the street weed, their marketing plan was to sprinkle the opioids and stuff on the weed so you get a stronger hit.
Addiction.
You all of a sudden get addicted to it, and that's how these people ended up in the hospital. Every single one of them had opioid withdrawal, except for the ones that died. It just killed them. Also, ask questions when you go in there. Like I said, ask questions about the licensing. Ask them about a COA. You might want to ask them, so where are you getting your product? What companies are you getting it from? If they don't know, or if they're reluctant to tell you, I would walk out because there's something wrong. People come into our store and ask us those questions all the time. We love to explain to you where we're getting product, who's making the product, all those things that are involved in it. So those are some of the things you can do as a consumer to kind of take that business away, because the law enforcement that's out there to protect you, whether you like law enforcement or not, their job is to protect you from things like this. They are overwhelmed with so many things. There's so much of it out there now that they can't handle it all. And so that's where all the money's being made. And, you know, I hope something I said today was informative for you. Or it is at least going to help you as you go out and shop. But thank you for being on the show today. Hope you learned something. Please, if you're watching us on YouTube, like and subscribe. That is what keeps us going on the social media networks. The more of that, the better. So it really helps us out. Also, we have a coupon code for those who listen to the podcast. It's HVP, meaning The Hempville Podcast 20, HVP 20, gets you 20% off of the store. When you go online, you just put it in the coupon code box. It'll take 20% off. If you're local and you come in the store, you're going to have to ask for it. And the reason you have to ask for it, it's the only way we can kind of track who's listening to the podcast and how it's working. Remember, Hempville CBD, hemp stands for help educate more people. Bill, we all live in the same community. We should all be looking out after each other. Thank you so much, and I'll talk to you next week. If you found this podcast helpful, I'd appreciate it if you took a minute to subscribe, rate, review, and follow us at hempfillcbd.com. This increases the reach to more people who are trying to navigate through the changing cannabis market and its products so that we can create a more knowledgeable consumer. Take a screenshot and tag me in your social stories to friends. It means the world to me to know that this podcast has positively helped you and that we get to be a part of your journey. Thank you, and until next time, here's to a better life.